Well, is the oil price all there is to talk about on the world markets, or is there much, much more to this? Stephen Mayne is the founding editor of crikey.com.au, and he joins me now as our commentator on all matters business. Good morning, Stephen.
Hi, Deborah. How are you?
Good, thank you. Let's talk oil prices and airlines.
Well, the $11 increase in the $11 barrel increase in the price of oil on Friday night was the biggest single increase we've ever seen in one day, and literally caused a massive global reaction. The Dow Jones suffered its biggest single points fall in more than a year. And all those geopolitical pressures were applied, and the political pressures across the world. Now, we had this odd situation of, obviously, it was Friday night in New York, so we weren't due to trade until the next week, and then we had the holiday yesterday. So it's been a long time for the Australian markets to react. And I guess the supplementary information before trading starts at 10 o'clock this morning is that the oil price was down $4 a barrel overnight to 134 barrels, so it's come off a little bit, and the Dow recovered 70 points off the 396 points that it lost on Friday night.
I heard an interesting statistic that I think Australian families, or an Australian uses about 15 barrels a year, and a Chinese family or a Chinese consumer uses about 2 barrels a year.
Yes, and you see all those sort of statistics on everything from oil consumption to car purchases, and this is the overwhelming story of China and India urbanising and the emerging middle class, and they want to live like the West, and that causes commodity prices and oil prices and things like that to react in a very scared way, because the demand supply equations just can't cope with the concept of more than a billion Chinese consuming at the same rate as the West. And that's where the real pressures are. So we see it popping up every which way. And I guess the auto industry, the car industry, cops it the most of any industry when you have oil prices spiking like this. And we saw the GM closing those four North American truck plants last week. But we don't actually have any listed car companies in Australia. So that means that in terms of, from an investor's point of view, it's the airline industry which really gets the focus here, and we are expecting something from Virgin Blue in the next couple of days, following Qantas's lead with cutting back routes, saving costs, jacking up prices, maybe a baggage surcharge, and all sorts of different measures to try and address a share price. In the case of Virgin Blue, which has plunged from $2.60 to 62 cents in a year, which is sort of, you know, penny dreadful territory, 62 cents.
Well, is that unsafe at any speed then? I mean, what's Virgin Blue going to do about that?
Well, there was an analyst report last week questioning whether Virgin Blue could survive in the longer term. I actually think that's ridiculous, because it has $750 million of cash on its balance sheet, so it's very strong. It's not like Air New Zealand and Ansett were back in 2001, where basically September 11 sort of finished them off, but they were, you know, already in way too much debt. And they've also got a parent company in Toll Holdings, a big transport company, which is, you know, which is very strong. And I don't think they would let Virgin Blue go broke. And similarly, Richard Branson himself still sits there with more than 20%. So I think that there is no question, from my point of view, about the solvency of Virgin Blue. It's fine. Maybe it's regretting announcing this expansion into long-haul international flights through Via Australia, launching in the coming months. But it's just going to have to be nimble and react. I mean, the global airline industry is now projected to lose almost $4 billion. I guess the global airline industry lost $40 billion in the year after September 11. So it's an industry which chews up capital and is used to losses over the long term. It had a shock in September 11. It's having a really big shock now, and airlines are having to react. And that's why, you know, share prices are coming off. But a bit like our banking sector, I think, Deborah, that we've got one of the world's most profitable and strong banking sectors, so we can withstand the global credit crisis. And I would argue equally that we have one of the world's strongest airline sectors, if you look at what stands behind Qantas and Virgin Blue. And it will comfortably be able to withstand the shocks coming from the high oil price, albeit with the share prices plunging and profits are falling.
Now, of course, on the wider stock market, the oil and other factors continue to play their part in tremors, really, in the US.
Well, in the US on Friday night, we saw unemployment jump from 5% to 5.5%, which was the biggest single increase in unemployment in the US since 1975, which basically sends a very strong message that the US is already in recession, and they've lost more than 300,000 jobs in the last 5 months or so. So I think that this was a bit of a shock to the system, and you've also got currency issues with the US dollar plunging, although the Australian dollar has fallen back a cent overnight. So we were pushing, we went through 96 cents, we were heading towards record highs, and parity talk would have been re-emerging again, and it's retreated back another cent overnight. So the US, I think it's fair to say, economically, I mean, you can't keep on cutting interest rates as much as the US have. And this is the first time that the US have gone into a recession where they've already cut interest rates massively, so there's not too much more that they can do on that front. And then I guess the other really interesting issue overnight, again, is the re-emergence of the credit crisis. And this time it was Lehman Brothers announcing effectively an emergency $6 billion capital raising and a shock $2.8 billion loss for the latest quarter, and actually declared that it had negative revenue. I'm not sure how you do that, but it had negative revenue for the quarter. So it's just this news flow where we continue to see bad news coming. There's the oil crisis, and then, of course, there's the credit crunch, and the Americans have been hit very hard by the credit crunch and Lehman Brothers overnight, and also reports overnight that UBS, the biggest bank out of Europe, the Swiss giant, its shares were off another 4% overnight in Europe, trading as much as 9% at one point.
Stephen,
talk of another quarterly loss.
How does this play into Australian markets? The idea that a firm as big as Lehman Brothers has made a $6 billion capital raising and made this sort of emergency announcement, it doesn't sound good.
Well, I think it's not good. I mean, Australia's biggest weakness at the moment is that we are a heavily indebted nation. So we have net foreign debt of $615 billion. We have household liabilities of more than $1 trillion, and we have a series of teetering corporate structures, whether it be Orco or Centro or the old MFS, or even, I think now, some of the satellite funds in Babcock and Brown, which was the big imitator of Macquarie Bank's model. And these various entities will continue to find it incredibly difficult. And I personally don't think Orco is going to survive, and Centro is hanging by a thread, and Babcock and Brown share price has fallen 70%. The Australian market is going to fall again today. It will fall by probably more than 100 points following up from Wall Street on Friday night. So you will see the likes of Virgin Blue, you will see the likes of Babcock and Brown falling again substantially today, in some cases to record lows. And it's simply a question of if you've got too much debt and you're trying to refinance, then you're under significant pressure. And thankfully in Australia, our banking sector is strong, our airlines are strong, and we're benefiting from the resources boom. So we should be able to get through this okay, but obviously we're going to be buffeted continually.
Now, let's talk about resources. Always lots of developments there. What are the latest?
Well, interesting. I mean, if you're BHP at the moment and you're giving, you know, you're Marius Cloppers and you're the CEO of BHP and you're giving, you know, almost a speech a week, it seems, as part of your charm offensive to win control of Rio Tinto. Just in the last month, BHP's had an absolute horrible time in Australia, where they've had this new tax slapped on them in the North West Shelf coming out of Wayne Swan's budget. They've had the new coal royalty tax coming on them from the Queensland government, slapped on them with these new royalties from Anna Bligh with the Queensland budget. And now you've got pressures coming from this big gas explosion in WA, which has taken out one-third of all of WA's gas supplies. It's the Apache Energy Varanus Island operation. And this is meaning that many, many mining companies, and BHP is one of them, is having to look for alternative supplies. And, with oil prices where they are and with a global energy shortage, the last thing you need is for the mining heartland of Australia to suddenly lose a third of its gas capacity. And we have this really weird situation where it's actually the Singapore government which is deciding how some of this gas is being carved up at the moment, because they are the monopoly distributor of gas in Western Australia, because the Singapore government bought Alinta Gas, the old utility over there. So you have this weird situation of a massive gas shortage in WA, and the Singapore government actually being a key player in deciding who gets the gas. BHP is suffering along with most of the other mining companies in WA.
Now, with us is Stephen Mayne. He's the founder of crikey.com.au. He's a shareholder activist. That's a fascinating idea that the Singapore government is somehow trying to sort out who gets the gas in WA. What impact is the diminished gas supply having on the productivity of BHP and those companies that are working to dig stuff up and ship it away?
Well, it varies with each different company. Most of them are able to source alternative supplies, and we're being told that the gas is only out for a couple of months. I mean, I guess it's not that dissimilar to Victoria's big gas explosion back in I think it was 1998, when the BHP plant blew up down there at Longford in Victoria, and there were people having cold showers. And I mean, the effect is very widespread in WA. You're having hotel staff losing their laundromat sort of facilities because the laundry providers can't get enough gas supply. And interestingly, also there's the big Burrup fertiliser float, which is a one of the world's biggest ammonia plant, is going to be built up there, or has been built up at the Burrup Peninsula, and it relies on gas from this very plant. So this is a float. It's due to close in a week or so. It's raising hundreds of millions of dollars. The Indian billionaire founder of the company is pulling out, I think it's close to $450 million, and all of a sudden it's not able to produce its fertiliser because it's lost its key gas supply.
How did WA get to be so dependent on this one source of gas?
Well, it's not only the source, it's a third of their supply. So they get two-thirds of their supply from the North West Shelf. And I guess you do have the ironic situation of the North West Shelf being one of the four or five biggest gas deposits in the world, and it's making profits of $10 billion a year. But most of it's converted into LNG and shipped off to particularly Japan, but also increasingly to China. And I guess there's a big pipeline coming down there from the North West Shelf, which caters for much of the household gas demands. But there's also this other Varanus Island operation, which is further south, which is run by this big American company, Pasha Energy, and is also partly owned by the Kuwaiti government, that particular gas deposit, and it supplies a third of the gas in WA. So I guess it does highlight about energy security, and each state needs to look at, well, what happens if our biggest gas supplier blows up? What happens to New South Wales if the Cooper Basin gas supplies get interrupted? And in WA's case, we saw it in Victoria in 98, and now we're seeing it with WA, that they are highly vulnerable to these sort of explosions, and the supply is going to be out for at least 2 months, and you're going to see literally hundreds of millions of dollars of lost production and higher costs flow through the whole resources sector in WA as a result of this, and it will affect exports, and it will affect everything from hotel laundry facilities to the float of the Burrup fertiliser business. So it's pretty dramatic stuff.
Now, speaking of lots of big noise from Western Australia, Kerry Stokes got a gong.
Yeah, look, it's interesting how the gong system works in Australia. Kerry Stokes was upgraded from the AO, which I guess is the second division, to the AC, the Companion of the Order of Australia, which is the highest gong you can get. And he was the highest profile business recipient of the gong, and I guess the two other most high profile people who got the AOs, the second division yesterday, was Rick Allett, who's the chairman of the former chairman of Coles and the former chairman of Southcorp. I must admit, I've got a bit of a quibble with that. I mean, Coles has been a pretty ordinary performer.
I read through all that fine print looking for your name, Stephen.
Oh, look,
contributions,
Deborah,
too.
Look, you do see. I mean, I've got Buckley's, but I tried to go to the 2020 summit and got knocked back. Couldn't even get in the door there, Deborah. So I'm not going to be getting a gong, I don't think. But it's interesting. So you do get some journalists pick them up. I mean, the late Paddy McGuinness and Michelle Grattan. Geraldine Duke's got one. So I mean, it's interesting also that Paul Keating refused to accept his gong. So he's just Paul Keating. Within months of leaving office, John Howard, of course, has stepped up for the AC. So he's done the conventional thing. He hasn't done a Keating, John Howard. He said, I will take the honour. And I think from now on we'll see more of a Labor flavour in it. I think this was the last series of gongs that were still washing through from the previous government, because it takes often more than a year for the whole approvals and recommendations process to work through. So
I think it's probably a very high recommendation of your independence that no matter how close I get my magnifying glass to that fine print, I'm very unlikely to see your name, no matter who's in power.
I think that's a fair comment, Deborah.
Okay.
Rejected by all.
Thank you very much for joining me this morning, Stephen.
Thanks, Deborah.
Stephen Mayne there. He's the founder of crikey.com.au. He's a shareholder activist and a watcher of all things in the business world.